Welcome, everybody. It is Peter Carroll. I did not get swept away by a tidal wave. I have not got lost chasing an ice cream truck. I have not fell into a great pothole. But I am very thankful for Ben Folks and Chuck Mendenhall for covering my behind last week. I had some things to get done and the boys were there as always. Legendary show from the lads. I appreciated those in the comments that were like, we miss Petey. We made that agreement a week before and you just followed through. I really appreciate it. Well, we're still in the throes of reacting to UFC 314. Obviously, Paddy Pimblett got the biggest result of his career and a fantastic performance to back it against Michael Chandler. And the talk around the European scene is what's next for Paddy Pimblett. As well as that, it seems as though the lightweight title picture has become more of a conundrum, as Khabib Nurmagomedov has said that Armin Tsarukyan is the most challenging matchup for Islam Makhachev, as we all wait with bated breath for that Ilya Topuria v. Islam Makhachev fight to be made. Ilya has reacted. He has actually gone on the Joe Rogan show, which, as far as I know, hasn't been released yet. We were going to try and cram it in had it been released today, but as far as I know, not out yet. Looking forward to what he has to say there. It might develop his side of the story a bit more. But as I said, we have a lot to talk to. Still in the reaction phase after 314. And we have the great Jasanga Malata, who, of course, all of you know and love. And the wonderful Chuck Mendenhall here. Jasanga's only going to come in for the first few. You know what I mean? He's got very casual. He's just like, oh, you know what? Staying around for the whole show, I don't want to do it, PT. But I will pop in for a few minutes. I will bless you with my presence for about 25 minutes exactly, and then I'll check out. So we're going to be hearing from the lads. Maybe we go welcome them in there. We have the great New York Rick producing the show today. On air, Jordan, would you believe, in the air once again on vacation. Who's shocked? Not this guy. I'll tell you that much. But yes, I believe we can bring in Jasanga and Chuck. If they're there, that would be... look at these beautiful men.
Yeah,
we are here.
One of these times we're going to have to open up the pocketbook and get Chasanga here for a full episode, man. This is can only afford half an episode right now, but soon.
What's going on, Chasanga? What do we have to do to for you to grace us with the full hour once again? That's what we want to know.
Oh, I mean, it's been a while. I mean, I think I haven't done the full hour since the move to Yahoo. So, yeah. I know you guys at Yahoo have got a bit of money, so send it my way. You'll have the full Jasanga Malaya experience, which that sounded weird just saying that, pay up.
The good news is after today, you will have been here for one full episode. I think if you patch it all together, so that's good.
That's fantastic. Well, Jasanga, I got to ask, man. Big win for Paddy Pimblett, a man we've both been covering for a very long time. But you have the unique location there in the UK, and you'll be feeling the after tremors of 314 maybe a lot more significantly than me and Chuck. So tell me, like, how big of a deal is this in terms of the Paddy Pimblett brand? We saw that big win at 304 in Manchester. He set the place on fire in the middle of the night. I think that was a real star-making performance. But what has this done in terms of his stock in the aftermath?
I think this has taken him to the next level, especially with the casual mixed martial arts audience. All I saw on my Twitter, the people who don't really talk about mixed martial arts and only chime in when Conor McGregor's invariably done something wrong, is this Paddy the Baddy is the next face of the UK, even though we have Tom Aspinall potentially fighting John Jones in however many months. But I think it skyrocketed him, to new heights. And the heights, I think, will only get higher if he gets matched up very well in the next, few months.
Jasanga, has it been one of those situations where you're noticing people being like, yeah, I knew it all along, like Paddy was going to do this? Or is it more like the reality, I think, in the States, at least the people I've talked to, where it's like, I didn't think he was that good, man. I'm a little surprised that he got here.
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter, because I don't want to make the comparisons between Conor, but obviously there are extreme parallels. Mm-hmm. There's always been that doubt from the very first fight. I believe Paddy's first fight was Luigi Vendramini. I think it was. And
I like everybody who brings up that guy's name has to think about it. Like, well, who was that guy? I was doing it last time. Yeah.
And from the jump, everybody said as soon as he gets matched up with an elite fighter, he's going to crumble. His flaws will be exposed. He'll lose. But incrementally, the challenges have been getting harder and harder, and he's been passing them with flying colors. And what's more impressive for me is that he's seemingly been fixing the holes in the game that he had when he came into the UFC. Fair enough, that first fight with Luigi Vendramini, I think maybe you can forgive him for being a bit wild. He wanted to make a statement. I believe, was that in the world famous Apex when he fought Vendramini?
I think it was.
Yeah.
How could you forget?
Exactly. That's a statement-making arena, if ever. But his striking wasn't as crisp. His chin was in the air. Some of the hooks were coming from the hips and what have you. But you fast forward how many years now? Just 2.5 or 3? I can't remember. And his striking looks a lot better. His judgment distance is a lot better, and he's a lot more methodical. So I think UFC they saw the star talent years ago. They tried to get him several times. So obviously, he declined and decided to keep honing his craft in Cage Warriors. But the strategic matching up has allowed him to tighten up some of those flaws. And you saw the result against Michael Chandler. It was like a truly masterful performance, striking wise, and especially considering we all know that grappling is bread and butter.
It was the best version of Paddy I've ever seen. He looked fantastic. I get the of course, and you're right, there's obvious parallels between Paddy and McGregor. There's no doubt about that. But I did see Ben Folks write an article just, I believe it was yesterday. It was published yesterday anyway. And he likened it to Bisping. And it, just in the way, in terms of, a lot of guys thought he was done, right? Like there was various points in Bisping's career when people were like, oh, well, he's never going to be elite. You know what I mean? Like this guy, you know, he's going to get to a certain point and at that point he'll fall off. And then of course he goes on to be middleweight champion. Do you see that as a kind of a good comparison, Chuck, in terms of like you were on the ground covering Bisping when he was making noise here? And I think when he beat Luke Rockhold at 199, it was a massive, massive moment. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were doing the I told you so thing, but can you see that comparison?
I could see it to an extent. Yeah, I was just going to say, I could see that to an extent. The only thing I would say is, you know, Michael Bisping, when he did it, it was because we'd seen a huge sample size of his career. And I mean, to the point where you thought that he was leaving at the altar, he was never going to get that shot. He would never get over that hump. So it was like there was an astonishment that he could persevere to that extent and actually win in the twilight of his career like that. The Conor thing is actually probably the closest, only in the sense that it felt like a trial run each time, right? Like, okay, Dennis Seaver, let's see if we drop the lights on him. Let's see how he handles the next guy. Chad Mendez, this seemed like a certain doom for him. He gets by that. You know what I mean? It felt like this escalation. In that sense, I feel like that it's that kind of pins and needles with just a healthy amount of doubt where you think that he's being overhyped to that extent, right? When he comes through with flying colors, that's kind of what feeds into that weird it factor. It's like, okay, wait a minute. He's better than we thought. And then it becomes like he meets the spotlight bigger than we thought. And honestly, his poise is what strikes me, man. Like you mentioned that Luigi Vendramini fight originally, he just seemed like he had a lot of jitters. You know what I mean? Like, and he didn't know how to kind of contain himself. And you get into what he just did in this one, the biggest fight of his career was supposed to be like the litmus test to see where he's at, and he passes it with flying colors. So I think it's that weird thing where you see him, it's like a video game, you know, you get through one level, very difficult. Okay, now what can he do at this level? And it's just, that's when it becomes fun, when they get to this point in their career.
Cheers. I'm in complete agreement. No, ask your next question.
Sorry, I was just going to ask, you know, you mentioned Aspinall at the top there, and we know he's a massive, massive name, a huge draw. Like, we've seen what he's done in London. Leon, as we know, has lost a title. He's had another loss after that. Where would you put Paddy? Like in terms of the traction he's getting now, has he surpassed Aspinall in terms of a clicky guy for, like, you know, from a media perspective? Like, is he now like the flavor of the month with the younger crowd? Like, he is now the guy that they're latching their hopes and their dreams to because he's so outlandish, maybe, in comparison to Aspinall?
I think so, 100%. Look, he's got the look, he's got the brashness, and this has been him throughout his career since day one, since back in the day when he became Cage Warriors featherweight champion. And I actually, it came up on my feed the other day. Do you remember when he threw up in the cage after? What did he drink? I think he downed chocolate milk a few hours.
It was Julian Erosa, wasn't it? It was Julian Erosa fight.
I believe so. I believe so. And even that clip has endeared himself to the younger generation. As you say, for example, I'll give you the insight into my own personal YouTube metrics. I put up a YouTube short of Paddy Pimblett just from the post by press conference, and it's my best performing short that I've ever put out there. So that just goes to show you how many people, I'd say particularly casual fans, are intrigued by Paddy the Batty. And in terms of numbers from our website, like the story, the Chandler fight report did what was one of our, I think it was our second best story of over the weekend. So that tells you everything you need to know.
That's wild, man.
Yeah, it's, huge weekend of sport too, with like McIlroy and all that stuff. So that's crazy. A UK tabloid, man, crazy.
You fellas think that, like, you know, when you look at him, so much of his backstory, obviously, like the Soren Bach thing, where he, you know, he loses and he was very depressed. And I think it's crazy because that could be defining, right? That could be a defining characteristic for just a normal fighter's career, where they would talk about something like that throughout. It just starts to fit into, you know, layers and chapters of this guy's career. Like, there's, he's still kind of bringing, you know, new storylines, new narratives in with him. But, you know, becoming a father and just kind of like all of the stuff, he's handling himself a little differently. Do you think this all plays into it? Because I almost feel like he sees the game a little from a little more elevation than he did maybe a few years ago.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned that back fight. There's a whole story to be told, and I'm sure Chisanga knows this. In the aftermath of that fight, Paddy didn't know if he'd ever fight again. His hand was in such a bad way. He fought that fight with a broken hand, and he came so close to finishing back in the first round when he kind of had him in this arm entanglement. And after that, it was like Paddy was like, I'm selling out on this armbar. And if I don't get this armbar, I'm just going to have to be in here. And he just basically for 20 minutes was just in there, just taking it off back. And afterwards, everybody was kind of like, well, the bubble's burst with Paddy. This is over. But what was happening for so many years was he was in such a rush to get to the UFC. He was putting himself into fights damaged a lot. But it was only at this point that it was like, man, you've done some serious, significant damage to your body. You also have to remember at this point, he's a very young man. I'd say the back fight is 23, but years before that, he'd already been famous. So he's walking around Liverpool at 20 years of age with everybody trying to drag him into a bar. Oh, Paddy the Baddy's here. Paddy, he's going to every Liverpool home game. So he's become like this iconic Liverpool character at this stage already. And then at 20, I think he was like 22, 23, it's like, oh, mate, your career might be over. And there was these series of restarts he kept on trying to do. Like he went and he fought Stephen Ray. He was a great fighter in his own right, but went and fought him in some grappling competition, and he got subbed by Ray, and everybody was suddenly like, oh wow, like completely disrespecting Ray's own stellar ground game, right? But they were like, this is a huge sign that it's all off for Paddy. And just somewhere along there, he just relit that fire. He got his body back together, and he went on this run that inevitably ended up in the UFC. Like, I don't know. Like, I talked to Paddy a lot that time, and it was dark, you know? He'd be like, I don't know if I'm coming back. This thing that was his whole identity from a young teenage, like, years that made him an icon in his hometown, suddenly it's just been taken away from before he even got to the end goal that he wanted, which was getting to the UFC. So the reason why I'd say this is unfathomable, it's not even about ability. It's just about, how can you overcome these series of events where you're nearly like, so it's kind of like Paul Hughes, and that like doctors are probably telling you, like, you're probably never going to fight again, mate. Then you add that to the celebrity element of it, where you're doing whatever you want. You are like, you, every eyeball is on you in every room you walk into since you're 20 years of age. But then 10 years later, you end up here on the verge of a title fight, like that, like on the verge of a title conversation at the very least. I think that's why, Chiz, what do you think? I think that's why it's so unfathomable that he's here at this age.
Yeah, and can you imagine being that age, being essentially the man around town, right? On cloud nine, literally the world is at your feet, and then you almost have, you essentially have the rug pulled out from underneath you, and then you're in the depths of depression. I mean, we've talked about the advancement in his physical abilities, but the mental fortitude that he's shown over the years, not only to get to the point where he is now, but just to get back fighting is something that many people, the type of fortitude that many people can exude and they can't do it. So, I mean, I'd probably say that's his best asset, his mind, his ability to overcome, and his ability, his mental fortitude will probably lead him to success later on, later on down the career, which I'm sure we're going to talk about probably next.
Not to mention, man, like you go through like understanding almost existentially your rise to celebrity and stuff like that earlier in life. Then you go through depression. Imagine those depths that you're already kind of packing in by the time you get to 30 years old into your prime. And I think his handling of the, so you remember like even Barstool Sports, so many people are latching on, and I know they were even still there, but it's like his handling of the spotlight at this point is becoming more and more masterful, because come on, fellas, like leaving out Ilya's name when you're in the, I mean, come on, that's other level.
I forgot about him.
I know. Dude, I was like, that is other level stuff right there. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, well, look, you're bringing it up. The subject of our thumbnail, which we know is incredibly important in this land of YouTube. Paddy kind of makes a show for Oliveira afterwards. And as I said on our post fight show, Chuck, I think that's a great show, because there has to be an odd man out in this title conundrum. And we'll be talking about more about that after Chisanga leaves us, because he's given us the UK perspective. We'll get into all that Habib Ilya stuff after that. But Chisanga, has he put himself in a great position by being like, I'll fight Charles, who everyone thinks will be left out. It will be Ilya and Islam, fingers crossed, all the fans hoping for. Is he like, is that a good kind of trail of breadcrumbs to leave for the UFC matchmakers to be like, don't worry about Armin Sarukian, Paddy Pimblett's the guy, I'm going to fight Oliveira. And it also, if he managed to get a result there, he is the next guy in line, right?
Yeah, picking a universally loved fighter in Charles is brilliant from Paddy. And I think the UFC will be inclined to make that matchup, because it seems by all accounts that they promised Charles Oliveira next with Islam Makhachev, but it also seems that they've done the same for Ilya Topuria. why else would he vacate an undisputed title to jump into a number one contender's fight? It just doesn't make sense. So for the UFC, I think that kills a massive problem for them. But personally, the fight I want to see him in, and I think the most winnable fight, is the Justin Gaethje fight. Stylistically, Gaethje struggles with people on the ground, and the version of Paddy Pimblett that we saw on Saturday night beats the version of Justin Gaethje that we most recently saw against Rafael Fiziev. I think Gaethje's on respectfully, I think he's on the way out. I think he's almost alluded to that ahead of the Fiziev fight, saying that he only has a few more left. So I think now's the time for Paddy Pimblett. If he wants to get a huge name on his resume, make a statement and get that title shot, I think Justin Gaethje is the guy to do it against.
Because he's plugged into all the math too, right? Like he's been in that top five space for so long now. He's fought everybody. It just makes sense, because I think, you know, coming off that last win where he beat Fiziev again, you know, you're not going to get a better moment to kind of take guys' juice and jump into that space than you would with Justin Gaethje. So I've been back and forth on this, man. I would love to see the Ilya. Like I've mentioned this a lot of times, but I think the fight that makes the most sense is that Gaethje fight for those reasons. I also think that he would be catching him exactly at the right time. You know, just like Chisanga was saying, I'm like, to me, I think that his style and the size he shows up in would just be like these factors that Justin would have a hard time with.
I want to just, and look, I agree with you. I like the Justin fight. If they go with that, I'd be more than happy to see that. I think it's great. I think whatever happens with him next, I feel like it's going to be a very significant test. And I do believe Gaethje's still a significant test. I was wondering, he made some comments at the post fight presser. And it's interesting because I feel like we're unpacking these comments in a very different way than we would have, say, a month ago. Because I can remember when he first started calling for Ilya, Ilya was on the rampage. Paddy had some performances like the Gordon one and the Gordon one, and people weren't too happy about it, and they were kind of giving out about it. And the idea of him having this beef with Ilya, people were like, you would get destroyed by Ilya. Ilya's going to destroy you. Paddy says afterwards, I would use the same game plan I've used against Chandler against Ilya, and it would work against him. And look, I'm not saying that I'm not the conversation isn't about is Ilya a better fighter than Michael Chandler, because I think we'd all agree that he is. But I was wondering, Chiz, do you think a similar kind of game plan, being very, very intelligent with what he's putting out there, his leg kicks, etc., using his length, do you think that would work against an Ilya Topuria, or do you think this guy just has too many wrinkles to his game to get away with that against him?
I think it would to a certain extent. Ilya Topuria, as he showed in the Max Holloway fight, he's very, very heavy on his front leg. And Paddy absolutely obliterated Chandler's and Bobby Green's lead leg. Let's not forget that he forced Bobby Green to, so much so that he forced Bobby Green to shoot for a crazy, crazy takedown. Me and you looked at each other like, what?
Sorry, his name is King. I'm going to have to correct this.
Oh, my God. Yeah, sorry.
All right. What the fuck, mate? Okay. That is disgraceful.
All right. King Green. Yes.
You know all about the monarchy, man. Come on. He's king.
If I speak my opinion of the royals, I'll be deported. But anyway, we'll move on. But no, I think the game plan to a certain extent would work against Ilya Topuria. And what Chandler, Paddy did very, very well against Chandler was he timed Chandler's dipping level changing when he comes into entries. Like when he shifts his weight, he always comes down like that. And Ilya Topuria, as you see, he likes to feint. He likes to move a lot before he sets up his strikes. Granted, he's not as reckless, and I say that in the most respectful way, as Chandler when he comes in terms of his entries. But I think he's somewhat right when he says that that's potentially a blueprint to beat Ilya. But also you then have to watch out for Ilya's slick, slick boxing and like devastating power punches. Yeah, I think... Yes and no to answer your question. it's still a very, very sizable task to overcome because, as I just mentioned there, Topuria's boxing, like most of Chandler's shots, you can see coming a mile away, and Topuria, those hands are together. There's no extra fat on them. There's no telegraphing the shots. So I think that would be a difficult thing for Paddy to negotiate.
We saw the great Colby Covington, and we know it's a nod to popularity, right? When Colby
this
starts
is exactly
to
what he wants, is us talking about.
I just, because we're so full of praise for Paddy today, I felt like we should bring in a counterbalance, and Colby offered one. I believe Rick has the comments here. Yeah, you're fighting scrubs. Guys who are 2-6, you're a bum. You beat guys who are 2-6. Remember that. You're a scrub. You're a fraud. Is there anything
to
be
said? Why does he have to exaggerate? He's 2-5 after the in the UFC, right? Like, add that extra loss.
he's obviously taken some issue with Young Pimblett, and he's kind of highlighting like all these guys are facing. We're on the downside. Is there anything to that, Chuck? Is there anything we can take from that and say?
I'll say one thing. You guys, I went back and looked at Colby Covington's 7th fight in the UFC. It's Brian Barberina. Come on. I'm not saying he's a scrub, but come on, man. Michael Chandler versus, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't think he has a foot to stand on here.
Yeah, well, look, we've solved who's next. We offered a counterbalance, right, Chizanga? Yeah. We have given the counterbalance.
We have.
Yeah, but with Colby, like, talk about pot, kettle, black. I mean, on his ascension to interim gold, who did he beat? He beat an aging Robbie Lawler. And then he'd be an undersized RDA at welterweight. I mean, yeah. Fuck it, all black. That's what I'll say on that.
True journalism. We covered it all sides, guys.
Yes, we did. Equally.
Yes. just two more quick ones. I know we're eating into our Mulata time here, something serious. Do you believe he can be a face of the UFC, like one of the big superstars of the sport now? Is he already?
I think he is over here, but globally, I think he can become the face of the UFC. I really do. He's got the bravado, he's got the personality, and so far, he's most importantly, he's backing it up. Like, even I didn't think he beat Chandler so easily. I thought it would be a tougher litmus test than it ultimately was. But with each fight, he's showcasing such improvements. He's improving in such a short space of time that I mean. I'm not saying that he wiped the floor with Gaethje or he wiped the floor with Oliveira, but if he was to finish either of them, at this stage, I wouldn't be shocked. I think the UFC have a real, real star in their hands. And like this matchmaking Tuesday. I don't know if they're going to be doing it right now, or well, they probably will do be doing it right now because the 8-hour time difference in Vegas. I think they've got to be very strategic with who they put Paddy against. They have to put him against a name now, because you can't beat a Michael Chandler and then go and respectfully fight even an Armin Tsarukyan, who, I mean, meritocratically is a it's a step up, but in terms of name value, he's on the path to stardom, well and truly.
Do you think he's there yet, Chuck?
I think he is. You know, I was in Miami early fight week. I went to a Heat game out there, and they had Paddy was just kind of their special guest. They had a kid doing some trivia who is supposedly like a UFC fan in there. So it's kind of mixing up basketball and fighting, and they're asking him the questions. He missed the first UFC when he got the basketball one. The third one was like his nickname or something was the Baddie or something. And the kid's like, Paddy Pimblett, you know, immediately in the crowd.
Wow.
And then they bring out Paddy, crowd goes crazy. And I was like, that's when you kind of see it, right? Like you see it in weird moments where it's kind of non sequitur, but just the very mention of the name and like, you know, him showing up becomes almost like a little bit of a magic to the environment. I could see it. I think he's there already.
Well, before you go, Chiz, big UK presence on this PFL card this weekend. We're going to take a quick look towards the back of the show. Fabian Edwards is there. Mark Giacchese's there. Mike Shipman's there. Is it Fabian's time to step out of the shadow of Big Brother Leon here? Do you think he can get it done against Impa Kasanganai and go on and take that tournament gold?
Ooh, I mean, it's always going to be difficult to step out of the shadow of a UFC champion. But I mean, I think it's just very difficult for Fabian, because the memory of the back to back losses to Johnny Evelyn are there. Do you know what I mean? And they granted he didn't get finished, but he got dominated twice in both fights. But if he can keep the fight with Impa Kasanganai standing, I think technically he's the better striker. But Impa's also such a big guy. I wouldn't be surprised if he just closed the distance, kept him against the cage and frustrated him. But I'm going to go with my boy Fabian Edwards to get a spectacular victory and reignite his own title hopes. I'm adamant that's going to happen.
Appreciate you holding back that bias there.
Which is, you better get back to work.
Occasionally I'm allowed to have it.
Yeah, of course, man. We all do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, man, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you for gracing with your beautiful presence as always. And look, we're going to shoot for that full episode one of these days.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure as always. I will be billing you for these extra 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes, I could have been making money. But in all seriousness, gents, it's a pleasure to speak to you as always. And hopefully get to speak to you again soon.
Well, you're the man, Chiz. Thank you so much, dude. Have a great
day.
See you, man.
Well, just myself and yourself now again, huh? It's
just the two of us.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, you like that?
Okay, right. We just, New York Rick has given us some information here.
Okay.
And it's subject of the conversation is going to go towards this lightweight conundrum. So Ilya Topuria, we've got the first news bit from his appearance on JRE. And thank you again, New York Rick.
I'm glad somebody else is sifting through the 3 hours or whatever that's going to be.
Thanks, Rick. We need it all in the next 30 minutes. this is from Championship Rounds on Twitter. Ilya Topuria reveals his walk around weight while fighting a featherweight was around 180 pounds. Mm. Holy shit.
That's
dude.
A lot. That's a that lot. Is... And I mean... This is why I was always a little bit like, okay, yes, he should get a title shot if he goes up to 155. But if he simply says, I just can't make 145 anymore, it's not the same, right? It's just saying like, I can command what I'm going to get at 155. It's more like, I have to move there. I would love a title shot. It takes a little bit of the leverage out of it. I know who he's like, how big he is and all of that stuff, but that was something to consider. I just don't think that 145, I just don't think he wanted to or could possibly make that anymore.
That's a big boy, man, because he's 5'7". I know he's obviously in ridiculous shape, but 180, walking around like 35 pounds over the course of 6 weeks?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. And he's shredded, man. Yeah, that's really, really interesting. We are hoping, as we've said at the top, we're really hoping that this JRE appearance gives us his side of this situation, because we've been hearing so much. We've been hearing that Islam Makhachev is going to wait for UFC 315, wait to see what happens with Bilal and Jack Della Maddalena. As Chizanga, he referenced earlier, it seems as though both Charles and Ilya believe that they're next in line, and meanwhile the champion is looking at 170, which is very, very interesting. we added another little bit to this yesterday. I saw it online. I believe Rick has it there for us, a quote from Khabib Nurmagomedov in terms of, yeah, well, he doesn't think it's either of those. Yeah, as far as he's concerned, I think Armin is more serious fighter than Topuria. Topuria is a good fighter at 145. Good, but we haven't seen him at 155. I believe Armin is more competitive for Islam than Topuria. We'll react to that first before we get Topuria's side of this, but is this causing more obstruction to the fight that we want so much, Chuck?
By his own, by his own logic, okay, I'm assuming that Islam can be echoed through Khabib here, and this is kind of the camp's idea or what they're presenting. But by that own logic, is he basically saying that he doesn't deserve a shot at Jack? You know, if Jack Della Maddalena wins the fight, he's never fought at 170. It's not like he's. If you're saying that the guy doesn't, you know, he has no proof that he's any good at, you know, 155, you're basically defeating your own point of what you're waiting to see play out. If you're going to make the leap, this is hypocrisy, baby.
Can someone ring the hypocrisy bell, for Christ's sake? I can't believe we're here again in the fight sport.
It is funny though, because he's got we're holding up two divisions basically as Islam peeks over whatever's going to happen in Montreal. But at the same time, there's now presenting arguments that would be counter to what they're pursuing. That doesn't make much sense to me.
No, you're right. And I didn't even think of that, to be honest, when he said it. I was just like, oh no, here it's happening again. The fights that we want, people are throwing shit all over my dreams. we have a tweet from Ilya, right? His reaction to this. Khabib knows I'm the one to take the belt from Islam. Only reason he doesn't want Islam to fight me. Damn. I mean, I love this guy. He doesn't fuck around at all.
I mean, that's
he?
Elementary, like kind of comeback, isn't it? It's like, you know, that's like what you might say in sixth grade, you know, yeah. But I love it. It's very direct. I love it.
Yeah. You know? It's such a weird situation, dude. Like that we're here and we kind of saw it coming with Tom and John, and you know, it seems like things are more positive than they were there, and you know, I have my doubts have been cast aside for a while. I think they're going to make that happen, but now we were kind of saying we hope we get one of these, and now suddenly this one is all over the gaff, right? Like, I don't know. I'd love Islam to do an interview. It's great that Ilya's right. Talking, but I would love Islam to be like, look, this is what I'm looking at, lads. Instead of these kind of tweets coming out, like reports from the camp say, Khabib says, I want to know what Islam is planning here, you know?
I just don't know why it matters. Like, you know, we've beat these other guys who come up from 145 who think they can overthrow me, and we've batted them back. Okay, fine. But what difference does it make to you, you know? Like, in that sense, like... I don't think it really reflects too poorly on Islam Makhachev to beat guys like Volkanovski, who at the time, you know, was considered a pound for pound best. Like, he was right up there. In fact, he was probably above, if we were, you know, to go back to whatever the pound for pound rankings were in the day, like he was probably above where Islam was at that moment. So it's like to have these guys with this momentum and everything that they're bringing up to you, especially in a permanent move, this isn't like he's going on a lark to 155 holding the belt. He vacated the belt. He's coming up. He clearly wants to be in that division. So I don't know what it matters to Islam and his camp. If there's a guy who legit is coming for you and that's what the UFC thinks should be the guy, and if that's a big fight, unless he's playing like some kind of hard to get through the press, I mean, I think that he should welcome this fight, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the pound for pound rankings when Islam did fight Volk. It was 1 and 2, right? Like, that was the whole thing. It was Volk 1, Islam 2, wasn't it? Or was it the other way around?
Yes, back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the way it was going into that fight.
Yeah,
we should look at our own pound for pound rankings here from the uncrowned staff, the only rankings that matter.
Segue.
It is, buddy.
Yeah,
there it is. Look at that. I mean, what else do you want? You've literally got the best 2 pound for pound fighters in the world sitting right there.
You know what? I know exactly. Look at that. Like, it's you rarely can get a situation where all logic, all matchmaking, all people aboard, everybody wants to see this fight. You're not going to get a better opportunity. And both guys still have that sheen right now of just invincibility when you spread it out to a casual audience, especially, right? Like, they just seem like bulldozers. You got to do it, right? I mean, you risk it if you don't do it.
I'm kind of like I wrote an article, I think, in February saying, like, all right, it's time to start worrying about Aspinall and Jones. I know we haven't got it yet, but I don't know. I don't know why I'm optimistic all of a sudden, but I suddenly think, like, this is all bullshit. We're getting both of them. Like, it's all just, you know, tickling our balls for the moment, saying this guy's going this way. And I don't really know what has me feeling this way, because, as I said, Habib's thing cast more doubt in the situation, but I don't know. It just feels too much of an open goal. I wonder, you know, we kind of talked about this with the Tom and John thing as well. Obviously, on Tuesday, I believe that was the negotiation period the UFC had with ESPN. But as we know, they're going to have a new broadcast deal by the end of this year. I wonder if that's factoring into any of this. Like, Topuria, Islam, you know what I mean? Like, it's just that big of a fight that would be the right
way
to kick in the door.
I mean, you go back to, you know, when they're going to sell the company, some of the movements back in 2016, like, some of the things were very strategic they were doing to boost value. I could see that being a case, you know, like maybe they want to make it as big as possible when they get to this moment. So we'll find out. But I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. I think we get both those fights. It would kind of be, it would be a poor reflection on the kind of like motto of the UFC that we put on the fights people want to see if you can't put these fights together.
I mean, look at us. Like, what are you talking about? Like, we are too upbeat, optimistic guys. I don't care what anyone says, Chuck. People are always like, you guys are dragging them, blah, blah, blah. Here we are.
I don't know what it's like out in Ireland, but it's spring out here, man. Everything's reborn. Optimism renewed.
We were in the dregs until Tucker Carlson came over, and now, like, you know, he has redeemed our spirits, thank God. He was down the Black Forge.
You just know Cyprus right back into pessimism, man.
Ouch. Interestingly, on those rankings, right? You know, we've talked about, like, an all-time fighter, Volk is the greatest featherweight of all time by some people's estimation, not featured in the top 10, Chuck.
I'm surprised by this.
Yeah, I mean, you're the guy who goes through these, and you know our brains, strange brains, how they work. Were you surprised that he didn't get back in there with
time? So I'd already, like, as I wait for everybody to send in their rankings, you kind of work out, like, your header, like, what you're going to call it. I already had put Volkanovski returns to the top 10, you know, you're putting all this. And then I write the intro kind of to that, you know, to that point, like, Volkanovski's back, you know, and then you do the, and realistically, like, I think half of us voted him in, and some of us kind of hide. The problem was that he wasn't existent from the other half. Like, he's not even voted number 10. So it's a point system, and his points just didn't add. In fact, he was 13th. So there were two guys, even if you went to the top 15, he would only have showed up 13. So, I mean, we run a tight ship over at Uncrowned, man. Like, you better be doing something spectacular if you want to be in that top 10.
How much of this article did you have written before you got these emails?
All of the intro. Like, so the intro is like, before you get into the blurbage, you know, it's like down at the, like, with each guy, I'd already written the whole intro. It was like, it was ready to roll. I was just going to, you know, it was more of a matter of where is he? 9, 10, like, where did he break in? But no, man, we kept him out.
Are we fatigued by his dominance? Like, I don't think I had him in. Funnily enough, I think every time, right, I'm putting a new guy in.
Yeah,
I'm trying. I put them against everyone in the top 10, and I look back through their most recent fights. Like, is it just simply a hangover of coming off these two like KO losses, and basically saying like, can we realistically put them ahead of these guys? You know,
yeah, that's. I mean, honestly, it's a good situation. It means you've got a lot of guys. I think New York Rick has There's a couple people that have like bigger belief, right, into one of the fighters than so. I believe, and I could be wrong here. I know Rick is on the controls here, but he has Khamzat way up there.
That's right. Which is,
so even if you don't have Khamzat, like he gets like a lot of points for being like three or four or wherever Rick has him. It keeps him in that space, you know. Like he might sneak in at number 10. So it's really how you value these guys. And it's tough, man. You guys, you know, Pantoja and just, you know, Duplessis and these guys that are kind of in that, you know, 6 to 10 range, including Ngannou and guys like that. It gets really tough. Who are you going to move out? You know, who are you moving out to put Volk in there? It becomes like a very difficult thing in that like 8 through 10 spot for me.
Yeah, I have it up here. excuse me. Alshadi has Volk at 10. Conor Brooks, the great GC, has him at number 8. PZ Carroll, oh, I missed him there. It doesn't seem to be there. Ben Folks has him at 10. New York Rick has him here. No, Rick is the same as me. Doesn't have him in there. Has Khamzat at number 3, as you
Rick
referenced earlier.
Rick needs to see more, yeah.
I do too, Rick. That this is not a judgment. Chuck Mendenhall has him at 8, same as GC.
Yeah.
Drake Riggs. He doesn't have him in either.
Yeah.
The great Drake Riggs, a man who has stolen your crown on top of the picks. We don't have a picks graphic.
No, he hasn't stolen.
But...
We're tied now.
Oh, you're tied. You're
I caught him again.
But he has it. You have to take the belt from him.
I think Connor's the other guy. All three of us are now. Yeah. Yeah, well,
me and
he
Ben
didn't hand
down the bottom.
That's what you got to sometimes wait, right? The pressure comes when you're holding it. Like, you're the top guy. That's when you find out what they're made of. And he could not hold that spot for even one extra go round. So here I am back, man.
Look, man, I never doubted you. Know that, Chuck. I was like, you know, this guy's a generational talent when it comes to picking. He's absolutely unbelievable. There's no UFC this weekend, Chuck. There is WrestleMania. There is a Cage Warriors card from Glasgow with one of my favorites, Chris Bungard, the man who had me out on the toils with Shane Gillis that night. He's got himself a fight. Big stuff going on there, but it's an opportunity for the PFL, and not to get into the card as much, but obviously we know that they're at the Universal Studios and you know, a lot of people have said like this is not a great environment for these big fights. Like I mean, as we said, Fabian Impa is happening at the weekend, and it just, I think that environment doesn't lend itself to something that feels so big. But could this be an opportunity for the PFL in the absence of UFC this week?
Couldn't hurt. I mean, if you're suffering, the bigger problem honestly is just that so much is going on. You know, it's spring break out here where we're at, and there's so much going on. Like, you got the playoffs and both hockey and basketball revving up, and there's other things that kind of step in, and some people are just fight fans. That's where probably who we're talking about here, and I think this could be a good thing for them. You know, you mentioned kind of being, what is it called that they're at? They're at Universal Studios or something, like in Orlando. Like, they're at,
it's
some
like
kind
a
of
soundstage.
The problem with it is, at this point, don't you just, it's like, it's unfair to the PFL to make the comparison, but like, we're already talking about just how you get like a diminished version of the UFC when it's in the apex, and we've been talking about this for a while. I know Ariel has been harping like, get out of the apex, let's get back on the road and put him in live venues. That thing has, you know, way overdue, over at least a year, maybe 2 years, where you're like, why are they still doing this? And there's something about that that transfers, and it gives that feel. I don't really love it. I want to see, like, there's enthusiasm that you catch. Like, I always point this out. When you were at that Dublin card, when McGregor was there, obviously that's a very different circumstance, but I felt like I was there. There was something that was so transferable to just even the stream that you're like, man, this is crazy. This is crazy. Cleveland was like that at UFC 203. Like, you could just kind of feel the energy coming off the room. I think that these live environments do translate, and I would love to, like, given that where the PFL is, I wish we could see that, to be honest, man. It would be a lot better if they could kind of give you that energy as well.
Yeah, like I saw that with the, when the GFL thing happened, where I wasn't on last week, and I know you, Ben, and talked about it last week, and I kind of just shared Uncrown's graphic they put out with the cancelled across it. And I had so many fighters, like UFC fighters or PFL fighters, in my comments, like replying to it, going, oh, come on, are you surprised? All this kind of stuff. But I'm like, no, like, we kind of need someone to fucking challenge here? Like as the UFC are so out ahead and they're so polished compared to all these guys that, you know, you just wanted a competitor. You want options there for fighters. And it's crazy to me that you mentioned it, the European cards, like Paul Hughes is fighting on May 10th in Belfast. It's going to be fucking crazy. I know it is. Mm-hmm. I've seen Doumbé, as I've referenced so many times on this show. I've seen him in France. It's absolutely insane. And these aren't particularly big cards, right? Like these usually aren't world title fights, things like that. I just don't get how you can have such a massive, massive moment and a massive kind of celebration in these countries that they're going to, including the Middle East when Hughes fought Usman Nurmagomedov. That was an incredible place. And just not have anything in the US. It's like they found it so difficult to snag the audience there, right? Compared to everywhere else, it's just not happening for them for whatever reason.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's crazy because, you know, the Bellator back in the day, right? Like Bellator would go to Mulvane, Kansas, and, you know, Thackerville, Oklahoma. They'd go to these weird places and you'd be like, what? Where is that? You know, Lake Charles, you know, like where are these places? But there's something to be said about the live venue. It's still like, you know, when they can pan a shot of fans kind of looking in whatever they're doing, just bleed and all this stuff. You're like, well, that just lends something to it. That's all it is. I do think that, like, it's not the end all. I mean, I know that they're going to be going, like, once they get past these quarterfinals, right, they then enter into the thing. I think I pointed this out before, possibly they needed to make huge shifts. This is probably what they had to do. And you got to take some, if you want to see that, what you're mentioning, kind of the competition, you got to take them at their own merit here and hope that the fights themselves deliver, and for some reason we get interested, right? Like that's really the key. It's not going to be exactly about the crowd, but I think that would help. It's really going to be about the fights. Can they, you know, can they give highlight real finishes? I think this is a good card comparatively. I think this is the third one, right? Like of the three, this is the best one in my mind. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to this one.
Yeah, like I'm genuine though. Are you intrigued? Like that, this is an issue, right? Because I'm talking to MMA people, talking to guys around the European scene, like about Fabian and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, yeah, I wish that fight was on early so I could just watch that, you know? And I'm like, shit, like this isn't, we're the MMA crackheads. We should not have to be like G-ing ourselves up. We should be automatically, we know who Impa is. We know who Fabian is. This is a great fight. The winner of the tournament is probably going to come from this fight. This is a big moment for Fabian. Can he step out of Leon's shadow? Is this his moment? The most promising amateur on the scene when he went pro. Is this his moment to do it? And people are just kind of like, meh. Yeah. Hope he wins.
Is that in part like just, especially out there? I mean, even in Europe, I'm like, is part of it just fatigue at some point? I don't know. I mean, we go round and round with these types of things. Like at some point you're like, more fights. It feels to me a lot of times what fuels fight interest is the emergence of gambling, you know, like just sports gambling. I feel like a lot of people then suddenly, I can make a bet and know the outcome in 15 minutes, you know? And I think that, you know, it feeds its own libido, right? Like, it's like people are like, let me jump in. So a lot of times when people talk to me about fights, it has to do with, and I know fighters complain about this all the time, like, don't come up to me and say that I busted your parlay, you know? So that's a big part of it, but I think if you're just a diehard fan, it's just so much. Like occasionally we get these weekends off and you're like, you know, I can exhale. So I never know if it's helpful to fill in that blank with an event or if it's not, to be honest. You don't want to go head to head with the UFC, but like sometimes I'm like, I think people are like kind of looking forward to their breaks when they get them.
Yeah, no, that's true. And Lord knows, we need some breaks. God damn it. These fights are coming thick and fast. But I don't know, dude. It's just so important for there to be a PFL.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so important that it's there, that there's not just one option, a be-all and end-all. But the presentation of these fights in that kind of atmosphere, and look, you're right, they will be going on to a bigger venue. And then, not to bring up one of Ariel's battles, but like, geez, like when Don Davis, before even Ariel got back to him, I saw that. I was like, man, like you're gonna get bodied here.
Favors. I know.
You're gonna get bodied. Like it's like to come after Ariel and be like, you're not a good journalist or whatever it was. Like you're leading people astray. Like,
miss,
I'm like, Like he's going to say something to you, dude.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You can't, like you can't. Okay, listen, man. If you're going to come at somebody, you can't go after their integrity if that's what they're built on. Like you can't. I know that people, like this is the whole thing. If you're a fight promoter, you can't publicly attack one of the best journalists, the sport, you know, we could go through this many times. What, 14 times he's won the award. You can't go at him publicly about his integrity and not expect, for him to fire back. And I mean, I thought he was well within his rights, but I think that guys like Don Davis, you wonder, like in the Bjorn-Rebney sense, and they're very different people, but do they hurt their brand, you know, in some point? And that's kind of what's happening here. There's a defiance building up around their league that you don't want to see. Like, you do not want to become, you know, a brand that is either a laughing stock or is considered a clown show or anything like that based on the faces that you're presenting to the public. You just don't want to do that, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I hope they sort it out. I think, man, whatever it is about what they're doing in Europe, it's insane. I don't know if they can somehow inject that into the US thing. Like, whatever the fuck it is, like it was mind-blowing to attend events here. Like, even Bellator, right, in Ireland, like, it did go stale eventually, but they had a good thing going. Peter Queeley, yeah. People were fucking going crazy over there to see it. Like, I don't know. I just really hope they can sort it out. Maybe Ariel's been talking about the tournament situation, too. You know, maybe that needs a rejig. I just don't know.
I wish there was clarity. I mean, the biggest thing that keeps happening, I pointed this out in a column I wrote a couple weeks back, but if you get Dakota Dacheva, like, in this situation where she becomes, like, I thought she was easily the breakout fighter of the year. I think we all voted her, right? Like, it was kind of one of those, but you can't go dark this long afterwards, you know? You got to keep it rolling. Like, one of the brilliant things that we've seen within the UFC is always the transfer of the dangling carrot onto the next thing, right? Like, it's always onto the next. And that has been a problem. Francis Ngannou, like, what's happening? What are we doing with this guy?
Johnny Eblen. I mean, the list is endless.
It's one of those things. Like, Eblen is like one of those guys who, like, we were talking about Fabian. Obviously, like, that's the nightmare matchup. And honestly, man, I didn't get a chance to say this, but Fabian should treat that like he got a bad taco, man. Get that out of your system. You know what I mean? Like, don't, because Johnny Eblen is not going to make it pretty for anybody. You know what I mean? But that is a guy that you could get behind, because I think you could make the argument that he could beat most guys on the UFC roster, right? That's what you want. You want to have these guys. Anyway, I wish they could just, the movement of their stars, and I wish they could build it like they, like, I know this is their best path, is to get these stars across in a bigger way, and it's just not going fast enough, man. It doesn't keep up.
Yeah, it's just with the champions, you're worrying about all of them, because it's just been this pattern, right? The Corey Andersons, this and that. Mm-hmm. And as I said, like, I'm a fan of what they do here. I watch all these cards. Like, I am genuinely in. I'm in already. I want this to succeed. It's just tough sometimes to, you know, we are telling people why they should be excited about these things. And sometimes it's just not a... It's just tough to do sometimes.
Right.
Speaking of things.
Well, if you say something like, guys, we got to watch PFL tonight, they think you're being paid or something at this point. You know? It's like, they think you're, and I'm like, no, like, this card is actually, if you fought, like, let's say you're a UFC centric person, there's plenty of names on this that you would recognize. It's not like this is some anonymous card like last week's a little bit more, where you had to kind of dig to know who everybody was. But like Nick Maximov, isn't he on this card? The old Diaz brother,
yes,
he's kind of returning.
Right.
He's been undefeated since he left the UFC. Guys like that, I'm like, there's weird intrigues in this in these tournaments that I think Mads Brunel, right? Like, he's in this, he's in this thing too. Like, guys like that, I'm like, I love that. You know, I love to see these other platforms for these guys to make their names. Like, what was his name? Who's the kid? Oh, man.
Oh, this Aubin, is a good advertisement. We're already...
Aubin Mercier, that guy. Like, you know what I'm talking about?
Aubin Mercier, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that dude,
back-to-back champion.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, he would have never... Like, if there's not a place for him to go do that, he just kind of fades out. Nobody's even... Instead, he left the game on his terms with a lot of money. I'm like, I think it's cool to watch these guys have another venture that might be their big one, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, guys, tune into the PFL this weekend.
Yeah.
I don't think we could have set the bed better than that. But I will be watching, of course. WrestleMania as well this weekend, Chuck. We've got a special preview with our fantastic wrestling writers on Friday, I believe. It's going out on this very channel. So make sure you tune in. It is the event. You want to dabble, right? Like, so a lot of people don't watch an NFL match and then they watch the Super Bowl. This is that, the equivalent of that.
This is the moment, yes. And this one's held out in... is this Vegas or is it LA?
I don't have a clue.
Anyway, I think it's somewhere out there. But I always tune in for it. I find that it's kind of fun in the sense like we have a Slack channel, and I feel like most Uncrowned, like the enthusiasm really shows up. It's like big wrestling things. It's like the rest of us are just like, hey, I'm talking to Ilya Taporia, you know, whatever. But it's like these guys are like. Who's going to emerge? Is it going to be CM Punk? You know, so in that way, like the enthusiasm is infectious.
And they hooked me with that fucking John Cena shit. Like, I was all over that. Like that kind of heel turn he did. I watched the whole thing. I think it was somewhere in Europe or Germany or something where he walked out and the crowd were booing him and shit. Like, I was like, I'm in. I want John Cena to win. I mean, I don't know if he will. I don't know how this works. Apparently, there's a whole thing about passing the belt to a guy who's retiring. You can't do that. I don't know. I'm just listening to Ariel talking. Who do your Nuggets have in the first round of the playoffs?
Oh, man. We have the Los Angeles Clippers. And
are they good?
I mean, they're good. Okay, so traditionally, they've never won a title, and they traditionally fizzle out of the playoffs. But it's always scary, and I think they were coming on at the right time toward the end of the season. So, and the Nuggets were like, obviously, they're in a state of a little bit of turmoil. We'll see how they, losing the coach and the GM just like a week before the playoffs. So we'll see kind of how all this plays out, man. But I think that first game will tell us quite a bit about our mindset and our ability. It's in Denver. They got the home court, so we'll see how it all plays out. Saturday's when it begins.
If you were going to recommend to a guy like me who doesn't watch basketball one series, what is the series I should zoom in for this leg of the playoffs?
The Warriors-Rockets is going to be good. Just given that that's a two seed, the Rockets, and I think the Warriors, you know, they've got some championship caliber players, right? Like, and
is Jimmy Butler on with the Warriors?
Yeah, he just played in the plan. He had a big ass game. I don't know, like 40 points or something. But it's gonna be, that's a good one. I think that the Pistons and Knicks, that's a fun series, man. The Pistons were garbage last year. They've turned it up and they've got a physical team. I know Ariel was like, we need to get tougher. You're gonna find out if you're tough enough right away, because this team will bang down in that paint, man.
Well, look, it's I'm looking forward to it. This is the time of year I get involved with the NBA. Rick, of course, Cleveland Cavaliers.
Cleveland.
He was shouting his confidence across. Like, before this live show started, you want to hear Rick. He was talking mad shit. The Cavs are going to do it. I will bet my life. Yeah. I will bet my life on the Cavs. All this kind of stuff.
He said three times in I think it was two sentences, he said lock. They used the word lock. That's a lock. Boys, write it down. That's a lock.
He just kept on showing. It was crazy. anyway, enjoy the PFL this weekend, guys. I hope you enjoyed the show today. The great Shashanka Malata joining us from Sun HQ in London. We have Chuck Mendenhall joining us from Myth HQ in Connecticut. Listen to this. I mean, New York Rick doing a great job. Well, On Air Jordan goes and suns himself on some Portuguese beach. Unbelievable. Oscar Losef here, always helping us with the beautiful audio. We love you guys so much. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy WrestleMania. Enjoy the NBA playoffs. But most importantly, enjoy the PFL. We love you.
Let's go, Nugs.